Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz and Blackshirt Jay Moore.
Yeah, welcome to it. The Wednesday edition of Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com. TJ Henning, he's got the old flip going. Lovely. Blackshirt Husker NFLer Jay Moore is in. That's a fake Diet Coke can. I can smell the Jack from here. How are you?
I need some Jack. I tell you what, they make me feel a little better after battling the flu a little bit.
Do you blame the little guy on that one?
Partially. Because daycare is like a cesspool, you know.
And we're just talking about the checkbook,
right? So no, Mama had it on Sunday. I had it all day Monday. Felt better yesterday, and today I felt worse. And
well, then, that's and just then, the company you're keeping,
right,
today,
right? And then the little one got sent home from daycare with a 101 fever, so he's battling it too. So
here's my thing on daycare.
Not all rainbows and sunshine at the Moore household.
No, it is not. If he got it from daycare, they should treat it in daycare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, would you pick him up in?
I got that call. I forgot to pick up my kid again. He can't walk home. He's 9 months. Well, good to see you, and get to feeling better. Can join us here on Hail Varsity Radio. Tap the line, Shillingbridge Cork and Tap House, 466-3776, 466-3776. Toll free, 800-825-5865 on Twitter, at Hail Varsity, at Schmidt underscore radio, at JMoore44, or at TJ underscore Henning. What's on tap today? A lot. We'll get into the hot reads and the black shirt defense with our very own black shirt, Jay Moore. Listen, I'm not an MMA guy. I dig boxing, but I'm not well versed in boxing. And we will have the pure gold that was the McGregor Money Mayweather press conference audio. You want to talk about, you know, grade A trash talk taunt? Whew. It was in full gab mode yesterday.
So was his suit. Did you peep his pinstripes?
Yes, I peeped his pinstripes.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot of stitching.
It's a lot of stitching, and the message on the inside was something we all feel like saying
and
sometimes.
The
yes.
Yeah, it was well done. Get a hold of his tailor.
It was well done. So we will have thoughts on the Mayweather-McGregor shouting match. Nick Saban at Big... I about said Big Ten. He used to be in the Big Ten back in Michigan State. In the SEC, media days continue in Hoover, Alabama. Nick Saban, listen, man, Nick was pretty eloquent today, pretty insightful. And Nick Saban just sounds off on transfer and the transfer issue. That is coming up next hour. Mike Shewhart, Wilderness Ridge Golf segment is 30 minutes away, and we're less than an hour away from Jerry DiNardo, Big Ten Network. Uncle Jerry will be with us. We'll wind down with a jock duck. Okay, so yesterday, speaking of media days, you know who's going for Nebraska? Chris Jones, Chris Weber, and Tanner Lee. Bird, Teej, let's dive into Nebraska. And of all the questions you have about this upcoming season, be it schedule or depth or fit or scheme, transition, I mean, all the things there. Good write-up by Vogues, who's back from Europe, on the black shirts. And the case in point when it comes to a reason to believe with the defense is the history of Diaco, his scheme, and limiting big plays and limiting points. I mean, that's your A and B bullet point as to why things can be good. But let's take a serious gander, a timeline, and B, you know, let's define what's going to be good. Mm-hmm. What's your thoughts here on this transition? And we've talked about it a lot, your expertise at going from DN to 3-4 outside linebacker. I mean, you know how, and you've explained how difficult that can be, but once you got it down, you got it down. But let's talk leap and what's realistic for the defense this year? And are there points in the year that you're looking at as to show progress?
I think going throughout the whole year, you're always trying to improve. I think it's going to be – there's going to be some – there's definitely going to be a learning curve, without a doubt. I think there's going to be some growing pains, games 1 through 3, I imagine. Unfortunately, you've got Oregon in that game 1 through 3 up there in Eugene. So that will be very interesting against that type of offense. But it's going to be hard – It's hard to judge. You know, you're, you know, buying or selling, or you bear, you're bullish on with the stock. You know, and I'm just in kind of wait and see mode, just because I think the outside linebacker position is going to be an interesting point for this defense.
Achilles.
It's potentially, just because maybe not as far as, let's say, a Marcus Newby or
Gifford,
but I'm talking the Alex Davis, the guys who've been putting their hand in the dirt. I just know how difficult a transition like this is. The terminology, understanding coverages, communications, really just standing up in a 2-point stance. And now it's just, I mean, it's, like I said, it's, if you're right-handed now, it's like trying to do everything left. It's just, it's awkward. So it's going to be a lot to see. I think secondary-wise, not going to have a lot of issues. I think they'll, you know, you can lean heavily on those guys. Yeah, it's probably more of your strength of your roster, in my opinion. Inside linebackers wise, you got really, really good players there. Not much has changed. And really, your inside guys are, you know, still playing football. Your stance is going to be a little different. How you play blocks and how you handle things will be a little different. You're just playing a little heavier. You're two gapping a little bit. You're not so gap responsible. You're more. Keeping guys at the linebackers and, you know, really just getting your position at line of scrimmage and getting rid of blocks and making plays. I mean, that's always rule one of the foundation of D-line play. But it's a little different. But to me, it's that DN that's now called to be a stand-up outside linebacker. That's the biggest thing. And if you're not comfortable there, I mean, I'm telling you, you think it's there's going to be a time where you're going to have a guy dropping out into coverage and it's a run play just because
he's just working on his job.
Right, yeah.
What he thinks he needs to do.
Instead of not setting the edge and you're going to get gashed. I mean, there's things like that. There's just little things like that can happen. You know, it's a power pass. It's a guy that he thinks he's coming to the fullback's coming to kick him out, even though how often you see a fullback still in play. But, you know, you'll see it Wisconsin and teams like that. Mm-hmm. Things are going to come kick him out. He thinks he has to spill or do whatever or leverage it. And the fullback just kind of slips by him. There's, you know, fullback wide open the flat, and he goes for 30. You know, it's plays like that. Those, it's hard to dissect because you never had to read that and learn all those things. So, to me, that's still the biggest, if you want to call it Achilles heel, or biggest concern with me. So, I wouldn't be buying right now. I think I'd still be kind of waiting.
You're not selling, but you're not buying.
No, I'm not.
You're holding.
Yeah, I'm holding steady. Let me see how Oregon goes. Let me see how we get into Big Ten play. How do you fare against a team like Wisconsin and these big boys where it's big boy football and it's physical and you got to get after it for all four quarters, and that's really where, ask me then if you're buying or selling on Diaco's scheme.
Well, and I think, yeah, I look at Oregon, and you know what still just like rings with me this week is Jim Walden was with us, and Jim Walden's Mr. Pac-12, he's with Washington State, but I mean Jimmy's like, you're gonna beat the crap out of Oregon. I'm like, huh? He's like, yeah, you'll beat the crap. Now, the impression I got in reading into that, this isn't an old Nebraska coach or former Nebraska coach sticking up for the Big Red as much as he knows what's been going on at Oregon the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. He sees Oregon as a program that's super soft. He's really high on the coaches, the staff, the assistants, the intensity they brought in. They'll be back. But when it comes to transition and buy-in and mindset, Oregon's been doing patty cake the last couple of years, and Taggart and company need to wean that out of them, that softness. Mm-hmm. So I think if there was ever a time to catch Oregon and catch Oregon on the road, you're going to go into a shootout where both of you are having issues defensively and offensively, and Nebraska may be way more stable because of fit to go in there and get a win. So I think Oregon, who's going to have the ball last and who makes fewer turnovers and makes enough plays, I think they can get out of Oregon with a win. And they've been this group's been in enough big games to know how to maybe stop the negative momentum. I think you're right about Wisconsin. To me, I look at this defense and this team and the athletes and players on this squad similar to even an 03 or an 08. Mm-hmm. Okay, how it wasn't pretty early, but it wasn't awful, and it got better. And by the end of the year, it was absolutely clicking with personnel and understanding and playing fast. And I think that's a fair goal to have for this defense, be lights out and nails for that November run. You'll have a bye post Ohio State, and then you can kind of ramp up towards the finish where you have Northwestern, where you have Minnesota, where you have Penn State, where you have Iowa, and be able to complement each other, have a good offense that's grown under a new starting quarterback and an offensive line that's gotten seasoned, and you know, you're physical and tough. And then defensively, have that outside backer you're talking about feel good, or find a guy that can work on it. And I think what's going to help get you from point A to point D is a guy like Weber in the middle, is a guy like Mick in the middle, is a guy like Kalu in the middle. All-star game last night, defense up the middle was special last night, as it's always been. But I think you got some really good guys that have the air quote intangibles to teach the young guys, so when it's their turn, they'll be ready. But the here and now, be pretty solid at making plays. And let's give Elkhorn a little love, my man, because that's one of your leaders on defense, mm-hmm. is Chris Weber. You got to feel good about that.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, he's been brought up a lot. Just solid. Solid guy. That's he's your if it's that scout of a white linebacker, like a description, you know. If you're a scout, you know, very smart, cerebral. What he doesn't have an athletic ability makes up for it in smarts and
work ethic.
But I
think he's got athletic ability.
I know he does, but it's just funny how
not all Elkhorn kids have athletic ability, but Weber's one of them.
Watch it.
I wasn't talking about you.
Thought you were insinuating there. But no, it's just funny. That's how that's how people, you will always refer to this white football player until the end of time. I don't care if the guy is athletic as hell.
It's grinder. Always, yeah, coaches say.
Yeah, exactly. That cerebral. What is it having?
That Keekly guy
ability?
Just knows how to anticipate.
Right, exactly. Oh, you know, he also runs a 4.5 40 and has a 30-inch vertical, but whatever. But also one thing I would buy into is Diaco's energy and juice that he has. I think that can really pay dividends for this defense.
You hear that a lot, but you're pretty sincere with
I think that
it being real.
But that juice, but it's constant. It's not, and I think with him, it's not. So players after a while can see that it's fake. Oh, he's only doing this when Coach Riley's around. Oh, he's only doing this when he's in front of people. But I think just his juice and his personality, he's I don't know if you want to call it high strung, but it's just he's very enthusiastic about what he does. And I think that can transfer over to your players, get you to practice hard, get you to practice faster, get you to practice more physical. But then one thing that you can't predict, though, is when you do run into some struggles in a new defense and you get punched in the mouth a little bit, how are you going to respond? You know, but that energy, that's one nice thing to have. Because effort and energy a lot of times can make up for a lot of mistakes. I was always told when I started out playing that new position, if you're going to make a mistake, make it fast. Mm-hmm. Make it fast. Don't hesitate and make a mistake and make it slow. But if you're going to make a mistake, you make it fast, you make it physical. Because a lot of times you can erase that mistake by just playing fast and playing more physical.
Do you worry about durability with the inside guys just because of in this new scheme and setup, if the three fat guys in the middle are able to climb to that second level?
Yeah. Not
that,
really.
No?
There's techniques. I mean, you just got to – it's butt and press. That's what you're doing. I mean, it takes some learning. You have to drill it, quite a few reps. But, no. Because, like I said, you can – every player is going to have their way of – shedding blocks and making plays. You can dip underneath, get skinny, use your speed, use your athleticism, or you can thump them. I mean, you look back at the Teddy Bruschis and all those guys, and the Willie McGinnis and all those guys of the Patriots and all those great 3-4 defense. I mean, those guys were thumpers, man. There wasn't a whole lot of finesse in their games. It was button and pressing. It was ripping and getting off blocks and making plays in a cloud of dust.
Jay Moore's in studio today. Hail Varsity Radio. As we're talking the Nebraska Blackshirt defense, hailvarsity.com. Good write-up by Brandon Vogel. And we start a lot of times with the hot reads and the topic of buying stock in the Blackshirts. We did a little stock discussion with Pizzo yesterday on some of the IT programs and what he's thinking. And he was kind of a hold on Nebraska just because of the question marks and some of the unknown. You do have some known quantities with Kalu and Jones. One unknown quantity I like is Carlos Davis at that defensive end spot. Am I wrong, or do I think am I wrong in thinking that he could be a difference maker from a pass rush standpoint? I know you can come off the edge with the outside backer like an Alex Davis, like you're talking about, or a Colin Miller. You've heard his name a bit. I know he was dinged this spring, but you got a natural pass rusher in Carlos that can make problems for the offensive tackle.
But you'd like to think so. It's just, again, it's different. You know, it's, you're just, where you're aligned in the, within the offensive line. You know, is it a four? Is it a four? Is it a three? Is it a five?
Shape,
it's just,
right.
but it's just a lot to work on. You just have to use different feels of the game, man. Sometimes this is going to work, and sometimes it's just, you're in a different position, so you have to kind of go with the flow.
We will talk McGregor and Mayweather and their love for each other. Hail Varsity Radio continues.
Allstate, two-year starter, and rush in for the Big Red, an NFL vet.
Is Dudeness or Duder or, El Duderino, if you're not into the whole brevity thing.
It's Blackshirt Jay Moore with Hail Varsity Radio.
Blackshirt Husker NFLer Jay Moore in studio. Chris Schmidt, TJ Henning. We are less than an hour away from Uncle Jerry DiNardo. Big Ten Network. Mike Shuhart. Shuey is 15 minutes away. Those Divot Dogs are just winning titles.
Always.
With youth golf at Wilderness Ridge. They won't have a title for you, but he'll have something shiny that you want when you win titles. And talking about Rick, it's Sauter Heyman, your exclusive dealer in Nebraska of pure-grown diamonds, 100% real diamonds grown in a lab instead of mined from the earth. They're eco-friendly, and they are 10 to 40% less than traditional earth-mined diamonds. Do yourself a favor. If you got a birthday or anniversary or I love you, it's been too long since I've gotten you bling, honey, go see Rick and your friends at Sauter Heyman and check out Nebraska's exclusive dealer of pure-grown diamonds. They're some of the biggest and best sellers at Sauter Heyman, 12th and O downtown Lincoln, South Point Pavilion, Lincoln around West in Grand Island. SauterHeyman.com is where you can log on. We spent some time talking Nebraska and, you know, how quickly can this transition take place for the defense? And let's spend a couple more seconds on it before we get to McGregor and Mayweather's love fest. What is a, because that's the hang up, right? You talk to Barney, you talk to you, you talk to 100 people that know defense and know college football, and year two is the sweet spot. Year two, it's all good. Year two, it's down like the back of your hand. But there's been instances where in year one, when you shift and transition schemes, that it can work. Mm-hmm. You just got to be flexible with what you can and can't do. And I think that, to me, that's the feel I get from Diaco. I mean, yeah, he's passionate. Yeah, he loves his system. He knows it. It can work. It's worked at a high level. That said, I don't think he's hell-bent on the square. You don't really talk about square peg, round hole defensively. You do offensively if you have a dual-threat quarterback and a pro-style offense or a zone read offense and a pro style quarterback. You just don't hear about it that much defensively,
right?
But it exists.
No, without a doubt. I mean, there's a lot. Nebraska could potentially face, and we were talking this during break here, was, you know, who they're playing at, the shade, the center, the zero technique, or you want to call with Mick. I think, to me, that's a square peg round hole scenario situation, right?
Okay.
There, because he is 6'4", 6'5", just because he weighs 300 pounds. 315, whatever he is now, it doesn't mean he can anchor down against a double team all for 60 snaps a game. In my opinion, he plays high anyways and got him in trouble at times. You can be as strong as you want, but you get two good dudes right underneath your chin.
It's a body type.
Yeah, I think it's just you are doing him you're putting him behind the eight ball already, I think. I think it makes perfect sense to make him the base five technique or the call side end in this 3-4 defense. I mean, he's perfect for it. Now, I just early on in the games, he might be fine, but you get a little tired. You play a little high, and boy, you get knocked back into those linebackers real quick. I mean, that's bad news. You know, you look at every good 3-4 defense in the past, and they, like we said, they are fire hydrants. They're short. They're squatty. Mm-hmm. They are tallest 6'2" tops, mm-hmm. maybe 6'3", but they are short and they are squatty, and they can just anchor in. And it's a dirty position. You don't get a lot of praise. You are honestly, sometimes you have to go to a knee and just make a pile and just create stuff, just because you can't afford to get knocked back and let those center guard or whatever combination get to the second level, or you get back there as well, because that just causes more of a mess. So that's my biggest square peg round hole right there is Mick. Other than that, I think everything else is pretty much, he fits well there, he fits well there. It's just getting comfort with everything. But it's going to be interesting to see if Mick can hold up there, especially with having some knee issues in the past as well. You want to talk about linebackers having the durability. Can Mick take double teams all day and just, I mean, what are you going to do with them on third down? Are you keeping them on the field in pass rush scenario, or are you taking them off? Because a lot of times case.
I still think, listen, you answer me this. Do you foresee a flexibility and pretty common to see a 4-3 still at some points?
Oh, without a doubt. You'll still see a 4. There'll be a 4-man front in third down situations, in nickel dime packages. Yeah, there'll be a 4-man front for sure there. So does Mick stay in? Does he come off the field? Do you go lean? Do you go, you know, do you go newbie on that one of the ends? Do you go, you know, Davis? Do you bring Davis, both the Davis twins inside? Who, I mean, what's the combination? You want pure speed here? You know,
because Freedom's your sack master.
You bring Freedom inside. You know, it's just, there's a lot of different scenarios you can use here. Like when 3-4s out was in, your two outside guys were usually your DNs. Mm-hmm. And then you usually had, like when I was in San Francisco, it would be like Justin Smith, who played
awesome.
He played one of the fives, one of the ends. He would go to a three. You know, Harrelson was an outside guy. He'd go to a DN. You know, that's how you kind of worked it. You have another outside linebacker, another DN, and one of your other five technique, or your other end in that 3-4 was your other, you know, play him at a three, a shade, or whatever it is. So that's how it worked. You never saw like Abreu Franklin, who was played our shade, our nose guard. He was two downs and out.
He's getting oxygen.
Right, exactly. He's chilling. So that whole, they'll know what to do. I mean, it's going to be interesting how that's going to play out, because everything's been so hush hush. You obviously didn't see anything in the spring game. But the whole scenario of how all those pieces are going to work out, there's still a lot to be seen, obviously.
Well, let's figure out whose house we're watching McGregor and Mayweather at. Not it. So it's between you two. But I'm, instead of just a flat out not interested, I'm kind of interested.
When's
now
the fight again, by the way? Sorry.
August 26th.
26, uh-huh. Okay.
Because we'll have Crawford's fight.
The 19th?
The 19th.
The week before.
That'll be down at PBA, and Jay's getting his ring signed for that.
Yeah, no problem.
So that's sweet. So, I mean, a couple back-to-back weekends of fight, and then we kick off, and football's here. It's a happy time. Mm. But listen, I've never done a ton of MMA. Haven't paid for pay-per-view to watch it. I will flip through it, and Junior will kind of perk up and say, oh, that guy's bleeding. I mean, it's kind of cool to check out, but I'm not super into it, and am poor with the technique needed. I mean, yeah, you go smoke somebody and choke him out. That's all well and good. But from a boxing standpoint, I mean, Mayweather's old, but not too old. And these two guys just gave it to each other yesterday. And Mayweather, in typical fashion, starts off talking a little bit of just how beautiful he is. Well, I mean, he just looks so, so good.
He looked good for a seven-figure fighter. He looked good for an eight-figure fighter. But I'm a nine-figure fighter.
Okay, let's talk income difference, and we talk about looks. Floyd was looking good, and he was talking about Connor, how well he looked. We go from appearances to being biblical.
You can scream for whoever you want to scream for. You can shout for whoever you want to shout for. God don't make mistakes. And God only made one thing perfect. And that's my boxing record.
Ouch. Okay, so on a scale of 1 to 10, the first two comments from Floyd when it comes to trash-talking PhD. I mean, I'm at an 8 already. Already there. That's what he does, but this was a whole new level. It's pretty good. More from Mayweather, and the underlying question mark, you know, MMA guys like to quit. They love to tap out.
We know Mr. Tapout like to quit, and you will wave that white flag because you can choose which way you want to go. I'm guaranteeing you this. You're going out on your face or you're going out on your back.
More from Mr. Mayweather. He's got enough.
And guess what? I'm an old man. I'm not even the same man I was 20 years ago. I'm not the same fighter I was 10 years ago. I'm not the same fighter I was 5 years ago. I'm not the same fighter I was 2 years ago. But I got enough to beat you.
Boom. Lastly, name them. Let's do a little history lesson.
You name them, and I beat them.
We talking about practice?
From the 90s to now. We talking about world champion 18 years.
So there's your quick little revision of Floyd Mayweather, Conor McGregor. I liked it. The biblical thing kind of bothered me from the perfection standpoint, but you can go out on your face or out on your back was pretty good. And I got enough to beat him. Now, Conor McGregor, pinstripes and all, no fear for our friend from Ireland.
I don't fear him. I don't fear this limited set of fighting. This is a limited set of rules that makes this half a fight, a quarter of a fight. This isn't a true fight. If this was a true fight, it wouldn't even take one round.
Whenever I hear him talk, I feel like I'm watching the movie Snatch. But I
know. I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah.
Diggs.
Yeah. Give me a Kampa. and more from Connor. And finally, we get his prediction.
As far as the fight, he will be unconscious inside four rounds. The movement, the power, the ferociousness. He's not experienced this. He's fought people who have shied away from him. I'm going to knock him out inside four rounds. Mark my words.
That'll be good.
There's no way.
Was that not
way.
Just a blast to listen to?
It is, and they're going to do this three more times in New York, in Canada, and in London to promote this fight. My thing is, like, are they going to run out of material to say?
No, they
got to write some new stuff every time.
I got to hear the likes to quit line again. Cut 9. It was too good.
We know Mr. Tapout like to quit, and you will wave that white flag because you can choose which way you want to go. I'm guaranteeing you this. You're going out on your face or you're going out on your back.
Okay. Guarantees flying. Are you going to get this thing? It's like, what, $90? Another 10 for HD?
Oh.
Ooh, I wonder what its 4K value. I used to be totally against it when it first came out. I'm slowly getting into like, okay.
Right?
I'm
totally going to.
I'll
going
be that guy
watch.
That goes to a buddy's house.
Yeah.
That's,
well,
and chips in.
But all three of good. Yeah, that never happens. You always intend to chip in, but maybe you bring the old veggie tray,
mm-hmm.
or you bring the old Keith
match.
Stone special. You're the guy who brings a warm 12-pack. Hey, this is my rent. I'm good. No, we're charging you extra now. Warm Keystone, you're fired. So, that was awesome yesterday. Nick Saban commentary, less than an hour. Golf, Wilderness Ridge Golf segment. Mike Shewhart. Shewie's up next on Hail Varsity Radio.
And we're back.
Fellas, you think we could listen to the radio lesson?
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes, that's awesome.
It is. Awesome. Wilderness Ridge Golf segment. Mike Shewhart. Shewie is across the table and can log on now, wildernessridgegolf.com, to get your tee time, to find out about membership benefits and pricing. Chris Thompson, Mike Shewhart, Director of Instruction. And if you have a son or daughter and you're sick of having them dig a trench when they tee off, might be time for some instruction, some important instruction from the best. And Shuey has Junior Golf Camp going, the final session July 17th, next week through the 21st, 8:30 to 10. Sign up, log on, wildernessridgegolf.com or 402-434-5106. Great Junior Camp program. Shuey, I saw on social media that them divot dogs.
They're at it again, huh?
There, it's, we on? Three? Bueller? Hold on.
There he is.
The divot dogs, I mean, you're winning, baby.
Yeah, that's what it's all about.
It's all, yeah, but. Just,
we had two this week, man. We played Monday and Tuesday.
I saw.
We got a second on Monday, and we won on Tuesday. So we just.
Break the news. We traded the steak knives in for.
Yeah, no, we're just chasing the belt, man. We got one more tournament. When is that? The 19th. And then they go through the points of throughout the year, and then the top 16 in each region qualify to go to the regional playoffs. And then if we can get through that, then we make it through the championship at Lincoln Country Club.
Ooh,
nice. Shoot, I was out there last week practicing, a little practice session early in the morning, and you guys were going through your junior camp with your kids.
Uh-huh.
And you have a point system for your kids. So they go through it multiple times throughout the summer. And they do chipping, putting, and is it pitching or is it full shot?
They do both.
They do both?
We do full swing.
Uh-huh.
We do pitching, chipping, putting, basically, and those kind of four areas.
Uh-huh.
And then we do an evaluation at the beginning of the year. So we have all the kids and we kind of evaluate where they're at. And then we'll do a mid-season evaluation, then we'll do an end-of-the-year evaluation. So we do it a little like karate. So as you continue to go, mm-hmm. you're a certain color belt, and as you get better, you get another belt. So we have these wristbands
mm-hmm.
that we have, and it's like everybody gets a wristband when they start. And then some of them will test into a higher level, so they get a different color.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so it works great because it shows and tracks the progress of the kids
Absolutely.
Throughout the year.
I just noticed that it's immediate feedback from improvements. Like I heard Chris, because I was on the putting green by him, he's like, man, you went from 8 points to 22 points all in 1 week.
Yeah.
And that's good for a kid to hear, you know, to self-esteem, you know, because golf can be obviously so
exactly.
hard. It's like,
Can tear you down.
Yeah, just a little bit.
And they get excited, man. Right. They know. It's like, oh, what do I got to do to get to the other
color? Was this your guys' deal, or is that the junior or the PGA kind of
thing? No, it's ours. It's our own.
That's
so,
well done.
Yeah,
they don't even
really
have
well
to
done.
Break any boards, you know, karate.
No, they don't.
So what color of wristband would Schmitty get?
Schmitty's in line to get his wristband.
Yeah. I think our green one was our beginner level.
Yeah. And I have the lime green one. No, I mean, Shuey had to talk me off the old, I'm going to hang the clubs up this summer ledge, was last week.
Yeah, last week. Did you go play this week?
I haven't yet.
Oh, so you're still okay.
Was after
you're excited to go play now, though.
Yeah. It wasn't pretty. It wasn't pretty in Wilderness. It wasn't pretty on the 4th, but it's okay. And she was just like, I didn't see any film, so I can't tell you to stop. But it worked out.
It'll be better this week.
Yeah, I'll get it figured out here. Now, you got the junior camp going on. And then let's spend a minute or two also on just some lessons and some coaching you do for folks of all ages. I mean, you start them young, and that's awesome, but you also help folks any age, any skill level.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I work with a 5-year-old, and I have a 92-year-old. So that's a pretty wide range that I work with. So but it's golf is golf, you know?
Which temperament is better? no comment.
At least the older you get, the focus level is a little bit better. But,
yeah.
Yeah, they're both fun. I mean, it's just fun. I mean, it's fun getting people to get better, you know, mm-hmm. understanding how to do it, what they need to do, and kind of talking them through things they have to do and start to see progress, you know. That the best thing is when they hit shots that they've never hit before, and then like, wow, how'd that happen, you know, and then you start to hit more of those and more of those. So it's like that's where the game gets addictive because then it's like, man, I can do it, first of all, and I want to do that a lot more. And then that's where it also gets frustrating because it's like, well, man. I just did it. How come I can't do it again? So, but that's the beauty of the game, and that's why it always, when it gets something you're kind of really into, you know, the addictive part of it, man. You just, you keep coming back for more and more and more and more, you know, and it's, but that's what makes you better. Sometimes you wonder why, but
right.
You're yeah, like, what am I, nuts?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like I was nuts yesterday after being sick all day on Monday. I'm out there lugging my bag for 36 holes and 110.
By the way, good plan. I mean, that was nice. That was a nice showing down there.
Yeah, so. I hung in there. I thought being a little under the weather helped a little bit because I really, okay, I got to slow it down. And sometimes, you know, you got a 36-hole day.
You bet.
And it's long. It keeps you patient. It keeps you, you can't really get too ahead of yourself. You're like, man, I got to, you know, no. I made a comment. I was, you know, I'm 2-under through 16 holes and, you know, getting a comment, man, you're playing well. It's like, well, there's a lot of golf left. And wouldn't right. you know, lost ball on 17, make a double. So thanks a lot. You yeah. know, it's like the no-hit comment. But, yeah, it was a grind. But
yeah,
it's a lot of fun, though. I tell you, it was,
it's getting out there, and
yeah, and getting after it.
Getting
and
the mix.
Being in the mix a little bit and yeah, seeing what you got. And
that's right. It's fun. And kind of like what you said, I mean, that's kind of the thing. You know, 36 holes, that's a long day out there. And it's like, you know, you can't win the golf tournament on the first nine. Mm-hmm. You sure can lose it, though.
Absolutely.
So it's like you got to learn how to pace yourself and keep things in perspective and just kind of keep things even keel because you never know, you know. It's like they always say, like at the Masters is all about positioning yourself to Sunday on the back nine. Mm-hmm. So it's like I'm just positioning myself that week that if I can be somewhat in contention, you know, within striking distance when I get to the 10th tee, because you never know, man. A lot of those guys go out, and most of the winners do. I mean, they go out there and you see, watch them shoot, you know, 32, 31 or something. Mm-hmm. So it's like you just see if you can get into a groove on that last nine holes, and it'll carry you to the end.
When you're teaching and coaching either the young kids or, like you said, you have folks seeing you up to the age of 92 or beyond, is there one part of their game that they're more focused on improving? I mean, and I'm asking a broad question. Yeah. What specifically about golf have you found that's most common that gives them joy? I mean, is it off the box? Is it working on putting? Is it the second shot?
Bar none. It's hitting it.
Just killing it off the box?
Exactly. But that's what I talk to them about. It's like that's important, no question about it. But it's like, you realize you only hit you hit 14 tee shots in the course of a round. You only hit 14 tee shots because four of the holes typically are par three. So you're hitting an iron off a par three. So if you break it down, you're really only 7% of your game is really off the tee box. 7%. Then you add a putter, chipping, pitching, and hitting wedge shots. Over 60% of your games will be basically taken with one of those clubs. But they all like to hit it off the tee, and it feels good, goes long, and it's like, but it's super important because it sets it up, but you use it so few times compared to how you use the other ones. They don't like to putt, man. It's boring.
Well, hang on to that. Some of us, it's not that we don't like to putt. Putting doesn't like us. More Wilderness Ridge Golf coming up.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
10 minutes away, it's Uncle Jerry, Jerry DiNardo, Big Ten Network with us. Nick Saban thoughts from Hoover, Alabama. In 35 minutes, still have 5 good minutes left with Shuey, and we're going to not let him leave studio. So Mike Shuhart, Wilderness Ridge Golf, is with us. The Wilderness Ridge Golf segment fires forward. Membership benefits and pricing for you to find out about youth golf and teaching and tutoring, the final session next week, the 17th through the 21st, from 8 to 10:30. And Mr. Shuhart, Shuey will help out with that, and Chris Thompson, both awesome at Wilderness Ridge, wildernessridgegolf.com. So you guys kind of gearing up for the Open here around the corner?
Yeah, I kind of forget, but it'll be nice waking up tomorrow morning and the Scottish Open be on.
Yeah.
But that's the best part about the British Open. Not my favorite major by a long shot, but the fact that you wake up in the morning and it's going, I mean, mm-hmm. You can watch it at 4:00 in the morning if you want, but a cup of coffee and you got a major championship right here to watch, and it's done by 10 a.m. and you go play golf and not have to worry about missing the, you know,
exactly,
on the weekends.
It fits great into a golfer's schedule, man. Watch it in the morning, go play golf in the afternoon,
right.
And it's like beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Got a full day of golf.
Royal Birkdale this year.
What's Birkdale like?
I don't know much about. I can't. I'm trying to think of the guy who
aside
won
from
last
cold
year,
and windy
last
which
year,
which it could be
right. Who last time played there? I don't. Gosh, was that Ben Curtis? That no, it's been after that.
No, there was. They played after that. Yeah. I can't remember who it is.
Yeah. It's, my British Open history is not as good as.
Mine either. Really.
As the Masters and U.S. Open.
I don't think it's a super traditional British Open golf course. It's a little more, if you want to call it American style. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's kind of a
right.
It's kind of a transition between that and American more. You know, it's not deep pot bunkers that you mm-hmm. can't get out of. And
I want to say like Todd Hamilton might have won the one when it was there one time.
I think he did,
it was
actually.
Weird because I remember like Justin Rose was really had a shot at it as an amateur.
Yeah,
kind of hold out for eagle from the fescue. On 18 last day. And
then Todd Hamilton was over in the bunker and got it up and down
right.
out of the bunker.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, it's a tame British Open course, if you want to call it that. There's no such thing, really, because mm-hmm. it's all dependent on the weather.
Right.
Like we talked about last time, man, it's all dependent on the weather. If the weather's pretty benign,
they'll light it up.
They'll light it up.
What's the worst weather you had to deal with on
oh,
tour?
Oh, man. Actually, I played at Kiwa Island in the National Club Pro Championship. There was a hurricane coming in, so they're trying to figure out how they're even going to get the event in. So they're looking at the forecast, so they're like, well, we're going to start everybody, like, crack of dawn and see if we can get them around the golf course, because it was supposed to come in later that day, and then they were hoping that maybe it would hold off and they'd get everybody done, because that was our second round. No, it was our third round. They had made the cut, so it was the third round, and... Because the way it sounded, they might not got anybody in. So we got out there. Unfortunately, the thing came in early instead of late. So we're out there playing in hurricane winds. It was the hardest conditions I've ever seen. There were two guys that broke 80. So 17, Kiwa Island. If
well,
you
that's
ever
already
see,
a
that's
hard golf course. I mean, PGA was there a couple of years ago when Rory.
So 17 is a par 3, which
right.
is a crazy par 3. I hit 3 wood the day I played it. The next day, it actually the hurricane kind of missed us, went through, so it was beautiful the next day they got to play. So the guys that didn't have to play on that side, they hit sand wedge into it, and I hit 3 wood into it.
Ah.
So I'm like, it was brutal. I mean, and you were just trying to get it on a piece of land anywhere possible out there. It was like, it was brutal.
Well, Hurricane Stories with Shuey continues. Jerry DiNardo up next, hour two on the way with Hail Varsity.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz and Blackshirt Jay Moore.
It's hour two. It's Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. What did Nick Saban have to say today about college transfers? You hear from Mr. Nick in about 30 minutes. Welcome in with the Big Ten Network, Jerry DiNardo, the coach with us at Jerry DiNardo on Twitter. Coach, how you feeling? Getting closer to kickoff. What's new?
Getting closer. You could push it back if you guys want. I mean, I am in no rush whatsoever, but I will certainly embrace it when it gets here.
Absolutely. So what have you been doing? Are you down in the sunshine and sand and on the boat?
I am. I'm still same place I've been quite a while. The boat needs to be cleaned. I just haven't had a chance to do that. Been doing a lot of cooking, a lot of jeeping. You know, I haven't been doing much of anything. You know, it'll pick up here in a bit, though.
I got to ask you, we'll get to football in a second, but tell me about your boat.
It's just a pleasure boat, 26 foot, nothing special. I've had it, it's probably 10 years old. Something to putz around with. You know, a lot of my friends have boats down here, so sometimes we go out, and my boat's not always the first choice. It's like marrying up. I have friends up. And so it's just the Chaparral. Nice little pleasure boat.
I like it. Coach, you got media days coming up, and I wanted to get your thoughts on what some teams are doing and some are not doing, and that's kind of bringing high-profile names and players to Chicago here in a couple of weeks. And Nebraska will have Chris Weber. They'll have Chris Jones. They'll have Tanner Lee on hand, and that'll be a lot of fun for folks to kind of get to know Tanner Lee. We had a chance to talk to him last week, and just a good dude. And he's excited about his opportunity. But Penn State is not bringing Barkley nor McSorley and no Barrett for Ohio State. And I get the reasons given by the university, but we spent a little time on it yesterday from a, well, it's kind of a disappointment, our one chance likely to talk to these guys. And then from a national perspective, there's been some blowback. What was your policy when you were coaching? Did you want to bring your potential All-Americans or All-Conference guys, or did you go with the senior route, guys that had been there and been able to establish the program? How did you handle it?
Well, let me give you a little background first, okay? I got into it with Teddy Greenspan today from the Chicago Tribune about this very issue because he was being critical of Penn State and Ohio State, and I defended Penn State and Ohio State. And then let me go back to when I was at Indiana. So I was there 2, 3, and 4. I can remember one year bringing Martin Lapistole, who was a Canadian citizen. I inherited him. He wasn't a starter, and I got, well, there wasn't much interest in Indiana's football program, but whatever little interest there was, people blistered me for doing that, and I did it for a reason. So, and I'd be really interested in your opinion about this, Jay. First of all, I tweeted this today. The coaches have an obligation to go. They are employees and representatives of the university. The players are not employees. They do not have any obligation to the media. Now, should they conduct themselves? Should they make themselves available? Is it an unbelievable learning experience that you can't get in the classroom? I mean, there's a ton of great stuff the media can do for student athletes, and I am encouraging it. I always do. I did only take seniors. It was just my policy. I used it as a reward for summer. I didn't feel like the media was more important than my team morale and my opportunity to reward someone, put them on a private plane, make them feel great, checking into a hotel, even if they weren't a starter, if they did something special in the summer. So I think it's what's best for the team, what's best for the individual, and then third, what's best for the media.
Well, I would agree, Coach. I think my time at Nebraska, there was we only took seniors. I did not partake in the Big 12 media days at the time. We went with our three captains, eventually Zach Taylor, Adam Carriker, and Brandon Rigoni. They went down to Kansas City and just made the drive. But I firmly agree that it should be seniors only, that you earn your way, even though you might have a Heisman hopeful as a sophomore or a junior, but it's just your policy. It shouldn't be that big of a deal, in my opinion. You know, you're a senior. We take our best senior players. They get rewarded, and I think that's an excellent way of doing things.
You know, Jay, it's kind of what your team culture is, and I'm not saying all 14 schools should only take seniors. I'm just saying what you just said. It was your culture when you were at Nebraska that's the way it was with seniors. I think each school can do it the way they want. That doesn't mean that you can't bring a sophomore a contender for the Heisman. I have never done it. Now, you know, Kevin Falk was probably the closest I had to a Heisman Trophy candidate, but I didn't take him. I didn't think I did anything wrong. I can't remember who I took. I guess I could look it up. So it's what's best for your program and what's best for your players. But I can tell you this, someone who has not gotten a lot of attention, again, you put them on a private plane, they hit Chicago, they have this big-time hotel room, there's thousands of people there. I mean, why does that have to be someone who's going to be at the Heisman Trophy dinner? Why can't it be somebody that might only play on special teams and be the one of the thrills of his athletic life? Why not?
Jerry DiNardo with us, Hail Varsity Radio, Big Ten Network, at Jerry DiNardo on Twitter. Coach, pretty good argument as to the prerogative of the coach and the program and the reward side. I think that sounds that's very sound thinking. From a conference standpoint, though, you have likely a Big Ten team that'll be in the playoff. That's how it's been. And then you have some high-profile guys that'll get to New York or that'll be on the All-American squad. Penn State's one of those it teams. Ohio State's a favorite, along with Florida State and Alabama, Michigan and the Harbaugh factor. I'm going down the list here. And do you think the conference is missing out on a chance to promote some of their stars?
Absolutely not. I don't think so. And Chris, now, you know, I was head coach at three universities. Every one of my practices was open to the media every single day. Mm-hmm. And so anybody wants to come talk to my Heisman Trophy, they can drive to Baton Rouge, they can drive to Nashville, they can drive to Bloomington, and they can sit one-on-one with any player on my team, except if it was a day before the game. That's right. The only limitations I had. And the press could come to the practice day before the games. They just couldn't talk to the players. So I think there's other ways of doing this. Is the Big Ten going to suffer for the playoffs and for the Heisman? Guys, 2 weeks from now, we won't even know Media Day existed. I mean, it's only because it's the next thing and everyone's chomping on the bit. This isn't even a blimp on the screen, in my opinion.
Coach, a big blip on the screen is Nebraska's quarterback, Tanner Lee, and what he can do in this offense. And as you get closer, what excitement do you foresee? I mean, you've ran a number of offenses. Let's spend a thought or two here on Riley's system and Lee and how he's kind of continued to master it, had a year to learn it, also did scout team, and then has really impressed his teammates since he got here, and that's just continued to happen this summer with their workouts and their chemistry. Let's talk ceiling for Nebraska, and specifically Nebraska having a difference at quarterback.
Yeah, you know, I think the intrigue is both scheme and personnel, see what Tanner can do. I mean, I'm anxious to see when we get to camp, can't remember what date we're going to be there, but, you know, how much of this offense looks like a traditional West Coast attack. You know, Mike might not show stuff because we'll have cameras there, so I might not get a good feel until the season starts. But, you know, in a lot of programs that have not changed offenses like Nebraska has, you're just interested in the personnel. I think we all think we know what Mike Riley's offense is supposed to look like, and I think it'll depend on how Tanner and the other quarterbacks can fit into it. So it's a Jimmy and a Joe and an X and an O intrigue offensively when we come visit.
Coach, me and I were spent first segment last hour talking a lot about Diaco in the defense. Are you buying or are you selling? Are you kind of wait and see mode with this defense, a new 3-4 scheme? And I gave my take, but I said I'm waiting because there's a lot of things that are left to be seen. How's Mick Stoltenberg going to play the nose? Who's going to be, you know, that 4-3 defensive end converted to a 3-4 outside linebacker? How are you doing that? But one thing I wanted to say is when it comes to, you know, these, not necessarily struggles, but the learning process, can Diaco's energy, enthusiasm kind of make up for a little bit of that learning, you know, to get guys to play quick? If you're going to make a mistake, make it with, you know, playing physical, playing fast. Can that energy, enthusiasm kind of cover up some of that learning curve?
You know, Jay, and again, I've coached different places. I never felt like the learning curve was a challenge for me. I always felt like, if anything, we had to slow coaches down from teaching too much because we didn't need everything. And I just found most of the guys I coached were bright. They may not have been the best students in their classroom, but they were conceptual. They understood the game. And so to me, I never let far away from center. You know, I wouldn't let a coach put a ton in. And so I do think the enthusiasm and the intensity is more important than the learning. Now, if they put a bunch of stuff in and expect, you know, the defense to look like it would look if they installed this when Mike Riley first got there, that's a mistake. But I think that's so obvious, we're not going to see it. I think the best thing about this scheme, Jay, is you look at what they've done at Wisconsin with good players, not great players. They've had some great players and they had some drafts and everything else. But the three down now is ahead of the curve a little bit. Now, in 10 years, when you guys are still around, in 10 years, you know, they may be going back to the four-man front because it catches up to you. But I think this is a good timing to shift to this three-man front because of the people that have had success with it. You just wish it was Mike Riley's first year.
Coach, I wanted to ask you this, and it's been on social media, and many folks have kind of fired back with the five best players they've ever seen. And I'm going to narrow it down to three. In your coaching life, the three best guys you've ever seen and competed against, not guys on your own team, but the opposition, three guys that you still say, wow, they were pretty tremendous.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness, Chris. How am I going to think of this? I don't know. I'm totally I mean, we played
Big Eight, SEC, Big Ten,
East and West. Alabama won the national championship. I mean, they had like nine guys on their defense that were great. I don't know that I can answer that. I'd have to. You got to give me. You got to give me that the day before for a homework assignment.
Oh, that's fine. That's fine. I mean, does Barry Sanders come in? I mean, that's kind of the like guys I've seen with my own eyes at Memorial Stadium. I mean, Barry's number one on my list from an opposing standpoint.
Oklahoma State, I'm with you. We played against him when I was at Colorado.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm there. Keep going.
Barry was good. Dante Culpepper came in, was really good. I had him down.
I'm not as familiar with him. Keep going.
You had Adrian Peterson at OU. Was incredible.
Absolutely.
And then
go to Nebraska, guys.
Well, I have the best guy I ever saw at Nebraska was, I mean, it was Frazier, it was Phillips and Frazier. I mean, 1-2, 2-1. I mean, those are the guys. And then I think you got to throw in Sue, Mike Brown, and man, who else?
What about Johnny Rogers?
I mean, I never saw Johnny in person play.
See, I saw him in person on the sidelines. I was on offense, so. When he was running through our defense, I was not blamed because I was an offensive player. Okay, but that team, Bob Devaney's last game,
yeah,
I played against that Nebraska team in Coach Devaney's last game, and Willie Hall, Rich Glover,
yeah,
wasn't David Hum at that time?
Then it was Jacobson. I don't know if Jacobson had graduated, but you had Glover and you had. Fryer. You had Glover and you had Johnny, both, I mean, Heisman and then Lombardi, Outland, handle it all.
I mean, we lost, Chris, we lost 40-6 in that game, and we actually won the national championship the next year. But this was, I think Nebraska had won the two previous national championships. They lost one or two games, but they were a national championship type team, and we weren't. But my goodness, the talent from that team. But Johnny Rogers, I think he returned a punt. He caught up. You guys can look it up. Look up that Orange Bowl.
My old basketball coach threw a pass to him. Threw a touchdown pass to him.
Yeah, So he caught a pass. He ran a touchdown, and I think he brought a punt back.
Well, on that note, I will not make you relive the 72 Orange Bowl.
Thank you. Jerry, you already have. You brought the subject up.
I will give you better homework assignments next time. Coach, thanks for making time with us today. We love catching up, and we'll do it again soon.
Thanks, Jay. Thanks, Chris.
Thanks, Coach.
There he is, Jerry DiNardo with the Hail Varsity Radio. I hacked him off there. Usually I'll shoot him a text, but I thought, okay, the three or five best. You saw that on social media.
And
Greg Smith retweeted it, and I made my Nebraska list, and then I made my list of – I had Pat Tillman on there because I saw the 96 Arizona State game. And I
think off the top of my head, if you want to go three all-time, Reggie Bush, Sue, man, there's so many good ones, though. I mean
you've had a good group of dudes rolling. I mean
Adrian Peterson, and I could go through the guys I played against in college.
I forgot Steve Ettman, because I watched him play at Washington when they came in here. It's 1,000 years ago.
And 90s, that Brunel's team?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Billy Joe Gunrack. He had a ginger quarterback. Then he had Brunelli put in. You want to talk about an embarrassment of riches, two NFL quarterbacks, Ettman at nose guard. And then Bean O'Brien at running back. And then I think he might have had Napoleon Kaufman, too.
Loaded.
Yeah, the thing didn't work out well in the second half. Nick Saban. Little Saban 101 philosophy on why they're awesome. You'll hear from St. Nick shortly. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
He's in his 30s. But sounds like he was born with a stogie in one hand and a brew in the other.
Now, say my name.
It's Schmitty on Hail Varsity Radio.
I got the body of a taut preteen Swedish boy.
Yes, I do. We're back with you. It's Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com. Chris Schmidt, Jay Moore, Mike Shewhart. Shewie's still chilling with us. And we have T.J. Henning. Big thanks to Jerry DiNardo. I scarred him. I got him to talk about his boat. And he's like, well, it's not as nice as others. And then he had to relive the Orange Bowl where Notre Dame got worked 40-6. And I didn't mean to bring that up. We just asked the question. The you know, the three best players he's ever seen. And I was expecting, like, boom, boom, boom.
Right.
You know, and the common answer is Barry Sanders.
Mm-hmm.
So there you have it. A jock doc on the way. Nick Saban at Media Days today. Kevin Sumlin also at Media Days today. And Sumlin took the podium. Didn't look like where that's where he wanted to be, but give him credit for not pulling a doctor's excuse. Because the world says Sumlin's done after this year, because his AD said it 6 weeks ago. And Sumlin quoted this, you know, I got to do a better job than I've done in the past. Agreeing with his boss, acknowledging that, yeah, I'm on the hot seat. I'll be better. Got to remain calm. And it's a common thing. You want the same thing. I came here to do a job, win a championship. We haven't done it yet. That being said, we've won more games than anyone at A&M in the last 20 years. I have a hard time believing that, but based on their coaching changes, he's probably right.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it's been a revolving door since they said, RC, it's time to go out to the old pasture, cowboy. And are we better than when we got here? You bet. Are we where we want to be? No. You want to talk about running with expectations after a miracle season in which they beat Saban, mm-hmm. Johnny Football?
Mm-hmm. What's crazy, you think about
Mike Evans.
They're still in the Big 12.
Yeah.
How many Big 12 championships they would have. I mean, just being the SEC.
Based on their talent, do you think?
Talent, I just think that.
Because they were going 6-6, 7-5 in the Big 12.
Right, but that was not with the same talent. That was, you know, you're talking Franchione, and then you're talking.
I mean, by the time Sherman run out,
right.
He had loaded that talent
right.
up.
Yes, they had NFL-type talent
and,
there.
And first pick slash
right.
top five pick.
Right.
I mean, we're talking Von Miller, too.
Right.
And then, I mean, Sumlin.
Right.
Gone.
Right.
Someone gets all of that.
Right, I know. But I'm just saying, if you could capitalize that still in the Big 12, I mean, how down the Big 12 is. I mean, it's just, I mean, you could easily beat Texas, easily beat Baylor now. You know, just got to beat Oklahoma. You know, K-State's mm-hmm. probably a dog fight. But, I mean, just the fact that you're in the SEC now, it's just, it's a whole
you're
new
praying,
ball.
You're praying for a .500 record and fourth in the West.
Mm-hmm.
Period.
It's a different type of ballgame. It's just, it's hard.
But I'll give him this. I mean, that guy's going to have $20 million in the bank, win, lose, or draw.
Oh, yeah. He's fine. He's fine.
I'd buy an island.
His agent's happy. His finance guy's happy. Mom is happy. Yeah, he's all good to go.
Another Jack Daniels reference. Jack Daniels is happy. let's talk to Coach Nick Saban. Well, he'll talk to us. He wouldn't take our call. But Saban chimes in. Let's start here with something that is a epidemic when it comes to quarterbacks. It's been a problem at A&M. It's a problem at a lot of programs, and that is the transfer issue. And Coach Saban was asked, you know, why does it happen? And why is it so prevalent? Really, really pretty insightful answer.
What players start to do is they start to fear their future. All these guys have these tremendous goals and aspirations. I'm going to play in the NFL someday. Everybody doesn't play in the NFL someday. I mean, how many guys get drafted every year? 250 or whatever it is. How many guys play college football? Thousands. Right, but they go someplace. When I was recruited, nobody knew who I was. So now there's a tremendous expectation that's created by 5 stars, 4 stars. This guy's going to make an impact because of the media attention that it brings. So they have this expectation, and as soon as it doesn't come to fruition like they like, they start to fear their future. You know, can I really play here? Am I going to play here? Am I going to be able to play in the NFL someday? And rather than making the changes that they need to make themselves in terms of what would help them be more successful, whether it's work ethic, making better choices and decisions about how they take care of themselves, what they do off the field, how they create value for themselves, that changing from one school to the other doesn't really solve that problem. But they think that it will. They think that my fear will go away if I go someplace else. And what ultimately happens is, you know, I get a letter from a player saying this was the worst decision I ever made in terms of leaving. So it's not always the best thing, but it does satisfy fear sometimes when things aren't going the way, you know, a guy thought they might. But the competition and the grit that it takes to grind through that and the perseverance, these are things that are important to being
there is, in a nutshell, why they are rocking programs and winning championships and better than you or anybody else, because that is his unwavering response to transfer. I mean, at some point, he'll get sick of it and tell a dude to get out of here. But that's his response, isn't to placate. It's, this will affect you, and it's a bad decision you're going to make. Mm-hmm. And I know that the audio there wasn't super crystal clear, but you know, four letters that make the word fear being the reason. And he 1,000% nailed it.
Dude, that was.
And it's not getting what you want, and you start worrying, and it's got to be better somewhere else.
No, that was great. I mean, it was very pretty calm response. I mean, you always hear Saban pissed off at some dumb question.
Oh, we'll get there in a minute.
So I thought, but no, I mean, that's, I've said it here, you just never know. I mean, the expectations that get put on 16, 17, 18-year-old kids,
you're good
are
enough.
Insurmountable.
It'll work out. It just, right. It might not be on your timetable.
Correct. And you don't know. Like I said, you don't know how sometimes a kid responds in life until they get socked in the mouth. You know? And that's what you need sometimes. You know? You need a little, you know, it's, no one likes it, but you just need, you need some.
It's part of growing up.
Right. You need some resistance every now and then. And it's, I mean, everyone always thinks the grass is always greener. You think it's always going to be better over there, but not necessarily.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's, you just hope you get kids that understand that you're, that's just a problem now in today. I mean, it's, I mean, you got 16, 17, 8-year-old kids that have tens of thousands of followers on social media and thinking that they're, you know,
God's gift, arrived.
Yeah, God's gift to earth, to football, to basketball, to whatever it may be. And they haven't done anything yet. I mean, they're a good high school player, but you're playing against a bunch of other high school kids. You know? So it's just, it's tough. It's tough on them. I mean, and listen, what
inflated sense is,
right.
is a problem.
I mean, that's what it's become, though, because of the recruiting, and I get it. It's millions and millions and millions of dollars. It's a huge business now. And businesses pay a lot of people a lot of money to call these kids and write articles on them and give them rankings and scout them and do all these things. And a lot of people, it's good information, but sometimes it's a disservice as well.
Now, Saban was so right on there. He may be right on here, but this is the volcanic eruption on a 2 out of 10 scale, but it was still pretty decent. Someone tried to insinuate, cut to, quarterback controversy, and that SOB got shut down.
You've reiterated Jalen Hurts as your starter, but people even want to keep saying that there's a quarterback controversy. Bozeman put it best
you're
a few minutes
that.
Ago.
You're the only one saying that.
Bozeman put it best.
To create it right now.
No, Bozeman put it best saying
that
they want drama.
That. All right, so I don't know who's saying that. Yeah. All right, so it's like me saying somebody said it's going to have a hurricane outside today. Is that right or wrong? It's just, I just said it. So that means I created something that makes everybody panic and creates news and go out there and get people excited and interested and afraid. Look, we have a lot of competition in a lot of positions. All right, and we're going to play the best players. I think our players respect that, and that's what we're going to do. We're going to try to develop every player on our team to be the best player they can be. All right, but we're not going to tolerate people making stuff up, all right, just to create interest, which I understand and respect. That's your job, but just not going to happen. I was waiting for that one, man. That was like a hanging curveball.
You did hit it. That was pretty thick there. That was pretty impressive. And the reporter had talked to the starting center, people wanting drama. He's like, I didn't say that. It doesn't exist. I didn't speak it into existence yet. Pretty good. Now, this was pretty real from Saban as well. Lessons in defeat. Lessons from Clemson.
We played against a really, really good team, which I think when you get in the playoffs, that should be what you expect. And we weren't able to finish the game like we needed to. And I think there's a lot of lessons to learn. And hopefully we won't waste the failure.
Does that not just, I mean, I want a T-shirt that says, don't waste the failure.
Mm-hmm.
That's so powerful. And he talked about his team started out well, but didn't finish like they needed to. And it was because they, again, the process, you get beat over the head with a shovel on this thing, but it's play to play. Mm-hmm. It's that minimized where you focus and you don't waver and you don't blow an assignment. And then all of a sudden you have 21 points put up on you by Clemson in the fourth quarter. And that, I mean, he is so right on, man. I mean, I get why people go play for him. He sends you to the league. But what he's doing is speaking the truth.
Well,
it's been the church of Saban this segment.
Well,
he's
the reason why they're so good and why he is the best at what he does in college football is it's attention to detail. And it has, and that level of football, man, you got to be. I mean, it's a game of inches, and if you are step with the wrong foot, your head's on the wrong side of a certain shoulder pad. I mean, that's a touchdown. I mean, it's small.
Against Clemson, it could be.
Yes, it's simple stuff like that. And he understands that, and he gets his players to buy into that and get them to understand that, the work ethic. And it's a grind. I mean, he puts them through a grind all season. I mean, they're the reason why this year some of his players are drafted a lot later because they're like, they have some injuries.
Mileage.
Right, yeah. These, you know, Allen was supposed to be like a top five pick. He didn't go to like a few plays later because like he has a shoulder injury, you know, that he played through all year. So, I mean, it's attention to detail, man. He just stresses it, and not to those players, but every single person on his staff is the same way.
That is Jay Moore, Chris Schmidt, TJ Henning. Mike Shewhart is in. Shuey, more from Nick Saban coming up as Hail Varsity Radio continues. A Jock Doc on the way. It's great to be with you on a Wednesday with Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back at it, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Time for a Jock Doc Wednesday. Lincoln Orthopedic Center, Dr. Doug Tavis with us. Dr. Doug, how we doing?
Not too bad. How you doing, Chris?
Doing all right. You got to be smiling about the home run derby. Yeah, it was fun, wasn't it?
That was a blast. I mean, of course, I did it the right way. I watched the highlights. Yeah. I mean, the rest of that.
You watched the highlights on your phone,
hours,
right?
You know? I mean, it worked perfect for me.
There you go. There you have it. Well,
those guys are amazing, are they not?
It was fun. It reminded me of, it didn't remind me of me batting. It reminded me of me throwing, pitching.
People going yard on you a lot, huh?
It tended to happen. Some of us younger than others. So let's talk a little baseball and off to see the Yanks next week with the little guy. And Brandon Nimmo, outfielder for the Yanks, collapsed lung. And you've had some teams bitten with the injury bug. The Yanks have had some issues as well. And a collapsed lung is not cool. Let's talk about how that may or could happen, Dr. Doug, when we talk about the diamond.
Yeah, so this is one of those things that, you know, it really sounds horrible, a collapsed lung, and you know, it is one of those scenarios where we really get worried about things. But it sounds like for him, this is going to just be a rest time to get over it. But basically, there's a whole bunch of different reasons why a collapsed lung can happen. Sometimes it is just the athletic participation of running the heavy deep breathing that occurs with those kinds of activities. Other times it's more of a traumatic scenario, like a collision on a football field. Probably, in all honesty, the time that I see it or am involved with it the most is with bike riders that go head over heels, crash their bikes and end up having a lung injury, a rib injury, and a lung injury, and then I may get called in for a collarbone fracture or something like that. So it can have all sorts of different reasons why it occurs.
Baseball, though, is this pretty rare to see in this sport versus some others, because you don't often think of baseball from a physical standpoint. I mean, yeah, there'll be collisions at home and guys will crash into the wall, but most plays are made, or you'll get beaned, but most plays are made with the leather and with the bat.
Yeah, it's pretty unusual, really. I mean, you'd think of it much more commonly in any of the collision sports. And again, with Nimmo, they don't have any idea, you know, why it happened. He ends up having, you know, some chest pain and you know, kind of described it like, you know, running wind sprints and just never having the feeling of your lungs coming back to normal after running a wind sprint. So they took him in and checked him out, and that's what they found.
Talking about Brandon Nimmo with Hail Varsity Radio, Dr. Doug Davis, Lincoln Orthopedic Center at Jock Doc Wednesday, as All-Star Break is here. Now, Dr. Doug, let's spend a little bit of you know, time. What's next for the Yanks outfielder? Is he going to be able to be back? Is he a 10-day DL candidate even with this break? I mean, what are the steps for him to get back at it and get his wind back and get that lung reinflated?
Yeah, so the lung, you know, we don't think about the lung as a tissue that heals up like we think about our skin healing up. And I say when I say we, I mean the general public. But that's kind of the reality of it. Just like you have a laceration on your skin, you give it a week to 10 days, and there's a lot of improvement in that. You give it a couple of weeks, and it's scarred in pretty well across that area of injury. And so I think that's probably reality, that over the course of the next 10 days to 2 weeks, he'll get to a point where that's healed up adequately, where he can start stressing himself again. And seeing, you know, whether or not his lung will open up again in that same area, or whether it's scarred down enough to where he can go ahead and play. There are other times where you have a real major injury to the lung and a big blowout to it, and then you end up having to do things like put in chest tubes to suction away the air that collects around the damaged lung. But that's not the scenario with this, and quite frankly, that's usually not the scenario with most folks that have a partially collapsed lung as a result of athletics.
When you look at re-injury, is this something that'll likely take some sort of trauma to re-injure, or if the guy swings too hard or runs too hard, I mean, could it pop up again?
It's possible, but you know, I think the likelihood is that he will be just fine with it. These fairly spontaneous types of pneumothorax, we call that, are things that usually resolve, and unless they've got some other kind of underlying lung disease, you don't expect there to be multiple recurrences of these things.
What are some of the diseases, Dr. Doug, that could hinder somebody who has a collapsed lung in the world of athletics? I mean, is there extra precautions, extra training that can be done to, and I know it's, you know, 9 times out of 10 it's trauma, but just if the lung is damaged, how do you build that up with this part of your history?
Well, if you had some kind of a previous history of an infectious process that left the lung scarred significantly and weakened in certain places, that would be potentially a situation like that. There are other situations where in chronic diseases emphysema, for instance, or chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. Now, obviously, our athletes wouldn't be out playing with those kinds of things, but where the lungs will weaken and you'll end up having a spontaneous break in the tissue of the lung to allow air out. But in the athlete, it probably would have to do with some kind of a previous infection that left a bad area to the lung tissue.
Dr. Doug Davis with us, Lincoln Orthopedic Center at Jock Doc Wednesday. We're talking collapsed lung, and Yankee outfielder Brandon Nimmo is dealing with that as we speak. And Dr. Doug, to wrap on this, when you've examined, and I know we talked about it a little earlier, but if you were to pick one sport when it comes to, okay, I see collapsed lungs, would you pick football or would you pick hockey? What contact sport would you say, okay, this is most common in?
Well, I got to tell you, thankfully, in my situation, it's only been in football.
Sure.
And, you know, we can probably list off a number of people that, you know, that we know, remember with collapsed lungs and stuff. But, you know, the hockey, certainly, they, you know, they get that impact, you know, into the thoracic area pretty hard going into the boards. But football is still king on those kinds of organ injuries, I think.
Dr. Doug Tavis, Lincoln Orthopedic Center at Jock Doc Wednesday. Dr. Doug, enjoy the rest of your week. Thanks for a few minutes with us.
All right, Chris. Hey, you have a good week.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
One final time on a Wednesday, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Mr. Blackshirt, Jay Moore.
This song bed reminds me I need to get on HBO and get the new documentary on Dre.
Yeah, I've seen that.
You seen all of it?
No. I've seen that documentary showing up there.
Mm-hmm.
But I think one of my smart TVs has the ability to watch HBO still.
Nice.
But I don't think it's
like five like hour long.
I got to do
shows.
That. I love Training Day. This movie's so good.
How's this? Oh, is this song on Training Day?
Yeah.
I haven't seen it in a long time.
That's okay.
This is like one of my favorite like hip hop albums of all time.
Okay, the 01.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
The Chronic.
Carson likes the song too.
Nice.
TJ's like, yep, got it out of the loop. Big thanks to Jerry DiNardo with us this hour. Mike Shuhart, Shuey Wilderness Ridge Golf segment. Another just awesome chance to sit down with him. And we were able to talk black shirts and Nebraska's defense and kind of their upside. And also hear from Nick Saban and Conor McGregor. Not together. That'd be kind of funny. But a couple of last thoughts from Saban. One thing that he does relentlessly and ruthlessly is self-assess. And he got pretty deep psychologically on staring at the mirror.
Whether you win or lose, we're always trying to self-assess to see what we need to do to get better. I think when you lose, the mindset is much more, I'm willing to change. I want to learn. I don't want to waste the failure. What could we have done better? Because everybody's hurt by the fact that they lost, especially the way we lost that particular game on the last play of the game. But it wasn't the last play. It's what led up to the last play. And I think that, you know, our players realize that.
So be willing to change. And you get rigid, you get stubborn, you get comfortable. And he ain't about that. And sometimes it takes giant slap in the face bird to step back and just kind of be real.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes you need that humbling experience.
You hear that, you know, football's a humbling game, basketball's, I mean, it's true.
Yeah.
Just when you think you got to figure it out, you don't.
Mm-hmm.
Lastly, the identity question and explanation. You know, the question was asked, well, why are you guys so good? Why are you five steps ahead of everybody? And Saban kind of goes back to the blueprints of his culture.
But I think it's important that our team develop an identity, which is always the challenge from a coaching standpoint, that all the players buy into, take ownership for, and are accountable to doing the things that we need to do to establish the identity that we want to establish of being a team that's difficult to play against.
Yeah, you don't want to mess with us. We will beat you up, and we have better players. Have fun. Four quarters of it.
Mm-hmm.
Get ready. But just, it was cool to hear him, and he got loose on a guy suggesting quarterback controversy. But for the most part, it was pretty solid Saban.
It was pretty tame.
Yeah.
It was really tame.
And he's already home probably fishing right now.
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow on the show, we'll get caught up with Kansas City Chief Alonzo Moore. Zoe will join us. Brandon Vogel back from Europe. Huh? Vogue's back from Italy, from Germany, the Germans. So I'll see if I can spend a few minutes on German beer with him. And Lars Anderson, his book is out. the biography Quarterback Whisperer with Bruce Arians of Arizona. So we'll get caught up with Lars tomorrow. Bird, good to see you.
Absolutely.
Shuey, you're awesome. Thanks so much. TJ, talk to you tomorrow with Hail Varsity at 4.